Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. We are here with the original crew, the squad, me, Doug, Clinith, and Eric. How's everybody doing tonight?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Very good. We're here to discuss WWF Tuesday in Texas 1991, their attempt to make Tuesdays a pay-per-view night. We got a lot to get into, but before we do all that, let's go to Doug with the plugs.
All right. Make sure you listen to Boxman and Smart, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, every Wednesday night, mixer.com/dirtsheetdudes, on 10:15, 10:20-ish Eastern time. If Eric doesn't have to work the next day, then he'll be on the show. Then listen to them Saturday nights, 9:30 p.m. Eastern time, mixer.com/Hollywood Hangout or Dirt Sheet Dudes or whatever they changed it to for the Hollywood Hangout movie show. Listen to us 6:30 p.m. Eastern time every Friday night for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. Of course, tonight, Tuesday in Texas. Next Friday night, we're going to do another career retrospective, another top 10 matches and moments, this time of a Mr. Mick Foley.
Yes, sir.
And then in 2 weeks, because we're going to be in the holiday spirit, so December 17th, Eric gets to pick the show.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
Yeah. And then, but Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, there will not be a show. Because Daniel will be out of town, and I don't really feel like doing one for the holiday season.
We probably need a break.
Yeah. But even though I'll probably be seeing you a lot anyway. But, all right, so make sure you pay attention to that. So next week, career retrospective, top 10 moments and matches in Mick Foley, December 17th. Eric gets to pick. And then, so on and so forth. All right. Tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern time, here on blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted, will be Unscripted Unlimited. And tomorrow night will be the big cartoon debate. Looney Tunes versus Scooby-Doo versus Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Daniel represents the Looney Tunes. Clinith will be representing the Ninja Turtles. And my buddy Rick will be back. He'll be representing Scooby-Doo. That is tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Eastern time. Eric and I will be the judges.
You're going down, Clintus.
All right. Yes. I'll be real rusty by that time. No work tomorrow.
All right. Good. We need you on your A game, buddy. All right. And then Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern time for the Scaredy Cats podcast, Daniel and Mindy. What are you doing?
Candyman 3.
Farewell to the Flash?
Ooh. Huh?
Farewell to the Flash?
Sure. Candyman 3. Is that what it's called?
I think. I don't know.
But yeah, we're doing that.
If it was a 95 thing, yeah. All right. And then this week, either Tuesday or Wednesday, or whenever they decide to do it, join Clinith and Eric for the Hard Hits show. They're going to review week 13 and preview week 14. And also, don't forget to check out our buddy Sean. What?
No, I said yes, sir.
Okay. Don't forget to check out our buddy Sean on YouTube at Elite Diplodoc or on Twitch at Sneaky Fetty.
Absolutely. All right, boys. Tuesday in Texas. This is big for a lot of reasons. This is held at the Freeman Coliseum in San Antonio, Texas. About 8,000 people were there. This was an early attempt from WWF at the time to try to go on Tuesday for a pay-per-view.
Yeah, they were trying out different days.
Didn't work because the buy rate was bad. It was a 1.0 buy rate.
Yeah, so you figure about they estimated about 400,000 buys.
Yeah.
But you got to remember, too, this pay-per-view was done on, had 6 days of promotion.
Yeah.
back in the day, and even still now to this day, although, like, now they're getting lazier.
Yeah.
But back in the day, you needed 4 or 5 weeks to promote the pay-per-view. They did this in 6 days. But they figured Savage and Savage and Jake the Snake
and
Hogan and Undertaker would be a big enough draw to where they could get away with it. And what was also different, too, is that it was only a 2-hour show.
Right.
Okay? But, yeah, and because they were trying out, they wanted to do different days, because at that time, WrestleMania was always a Sunday. Survivor Series was on a Thursday. Well, Wednesday or Thursday, depending on what they wanted to do. And SummerSlam was usually scheduled for a Monday. And Royal Rumble was either Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah.
And so they wanted to try to see if they could draw on a Tuesday.
They didn't.
No. But again, I think it had more to do with the fact that they had 6 days.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, a lot of it, though, too, was also trying to carry over the storylines from Survivor Series, which worked to a point. Again, the issue is because you want to get it as out there as possible. I remember, you know, being a little kid, and I didn't even know this was happening. I'm sitting there watching cartoons one night with Dad, or watching something. And then all of a sudden, 8 o'clock rolls around, or not even 8 o'clock, like about 5 after 8.
Yeah.
And Dad turns on wrestling, and it's Bret Hart and Skinner. And I'm like, hey, this is on?
Yeah.
And he looks at me and says, oh, I forgot about it too. We even forgot about it too. I didn't even know it was on.
Yeah.
So... But, yeah, so it was just kind of spur the moment out there.
And just to kind of, you know, be fair with the other pay-per-views, as far as attendance, this had 8,000 people there when you talk about drawing people into the building. Survivor Series had 17,000. SummerSlam had 20,000.
Right. Okay, so here's the thing on that. This was actually supposed to be a house show. When they originally put this date together, this was scheduled as a house show. That's why they, I mean, if you listen to the broadcast, Gorilla Monsoon said there was 20,000 plus there because they're supposed to say that because that's how many you're supposed to get for a pay-per-view.
He lied, though.
Yeah. But this is a house show building.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a TV taping building. It's not a major arena. So that's why this was supposed to be a house show, but they changed it at the last minute.
Yeah, it can seat up.
So they considered it as a pay per view.
It can seat up to about 1,200 people, though.
1,200 or 12,000.
12,000.
Okay.
And they only drew 8. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so, again, they said it was a sellout. It wasn't. But, again, like, back in those days, you're not – back in those days, like, they gimmicked and they fabricated just about everything.
Yeah. I mean, they're not even – they're not really fighting, so you might as well lie about the numbers, too. Fuck it.
Yeah.
All right, did you want to get into the dark match stuff, or do you want to get into the pay-per-view first, or
– Well, all right, so the dark matches – there was a lot of them.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, on the Wikipedia page, they have 9 listed, but on a website called the History of WWE.com, which lists every house show that they did and every event that they fucking did.
That guy's got a lot of time, huh?
It was actually, I think this was actually in This guy got all his information from Meltzer.
Okay.
But yes, he has an awful lot of time. So at the show, they had their dark matches, but they also taped some for Primetime Wrestling, which you can find on YouTube, by the way, or some of them. So, and a couple of these names I kind of want to get into, because these are guys that didn't even really work for the company at that time. But, like, the very first match of this show, and again, it was a dark match, was Ron and Don Harris defeating jobbers Brian Donahue and Brian Costello. Now, Ron and Don Harris, obviously, they would become 8-Ball and Skull later on. This was kind of a tryout for them because they're actually from Texas.
They're from Texas?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay.
And what's actually interesting about this two guys is there was a few people on this show that were worked dark matches that were coming from the GWF.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Sir Charles, who would later on become Papa Shango and then have a little run and a little gimmick called The Godfather.
I think I remember him.
Yeah. He wrestled Dale Wolfe in one. Chris Walker and Brian Lee, who were actually two of Global's biggest stars at the time, were at this show. And they had a match against one another. And Chris Walker had actually been signed. As a matter of fact, he had actually left the company while still as a tag team champion.
Yes.
And Brian Lee was actually thinking about leaving. This was Brian Lee's tryout. He didn't get signed.
Not yet.
No, he would get signed later on. But actually, because he didn't get signed here, he actually went and worked for Jim Cornette at Smoky Mountain.
Oh, that poor bastard.
He was one of Cornette's biggest stars.
Now, the biggest one for me is like, dude, just put the Nasties and the Bushwhackers on the fucking card. That could have opened up instead of Brett and Skinner. Why not? You have an hour and a half pay-per-view. Give them 2 hours and put fucking Nasties and Bushwhackers on there. I mean, you got the tag team championship match, too, so maybe that shouldn't
go. Well, there were two tag title matches on there because, like, you had Hawk and Animal work twice.
Yeah.
Again, once against Sean and Marty, which they could have used for storyline purposes, and then against Earthquake and Typhoon.
So at least put one of those matches on the paper.
No, I agree.
Did one make the Coliseum tape?
No. I don't know if any of these.
So they worked two tag matches in the same night, and none of them made air.
Yeah, none of them.
Holy shit. Why'd they have them come out twice then? You think they'd be filming it for sure?
Well, the funny thing is, and when we had Barry Horowitz on the show a few weeks ago, he basically, you know, he came out and he said that when you're doing a big show or like when you're doing a pay-per-view, everybody technically has to go.
Yeah.
And you have to be ready to work at any time. Now, why Hawk and Animal were not part of the pay-per-view, I don't know, because they were obviously the top tag team at the time.
Yeah, they're the tag team champions.
And if you think about it, they are up there in the merchandise sales of the company.
They're always selling the little spike shoulder pads.
The spike shoulder pads. The Buddy Dolls had come out. Those were still popular at the time.
Yeah.
Face paint.
Yeah.
The little WWF squirt heads.
Yeah.
All right.
They were merch sellers.
Yeah, they were merch sellers. And if you think about it, and I was actually thinking about this today, if you go down the list of, like, the top baby faces and top heels, if you look at all the baby faces in that company at the time, obviously Hogan was number one.
Yeah, Macho too.
Savage was number two.
Yeah.
Number three, you could actually kind of toss up between Piper and LOD, I think.
I have Bulldog in there, too. Maybe four or five.
Bulldog? Bulldog, I would actually say, and to be honest with you, I do agree with the fact that he was a top babyface, because in that week that Undertaker was working, was the WWF champion.
Yeah.
He worked a house show loop with Bulldog.
Right.
Like, it wasn't him and Hogan working the houses. It was him defending the damn title against the Bulldog.
Yeah. And even, I mean, we'll get into the match, and I know you hated the rivalry between him and the Warlord, but if it did anything, it did kind of certify him as a top guy or a top babyface, because he's kicking this guy. He didn't lose once in the angle. Like, he might be going against the Warlord, and that might not mean shit, but they're kind of portraying him in a positive way every time, and he's on pay-per-view. So.
Right. Yeah, and they felt the need to put this guy on this pay-per-view when you had other guys on here. Like, you had Piper and Flair work a dark match, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. Flair showed up, but...
Yeah, I mean, Flair was on there. I mean, they were all there. The only one that I can think of off the top of my head whose names I don't see, who I did not see on the list of the matches, IRS wasn't there.
Okay.
And Kerry Von Erich, the Texas Tornado, he wasn't there.
Okay.
All right. And Kerry lived in Texas.
Did you say Piper worked Flair, or they both worked on this card?
They went against each other on the card.
On a dark match.
Yeah.
They did Piper Flair on a dark match.
Yeah, it was actually the final match before the pay-per-view went to air. And here's the thing. If you do a count, I would say probably about this entire night had about 19, maybe 20 matches. Okay?
Yeah.
Maybe more, but I'm not going to count, especially out loud.
But that's Flair and Piper. Clinton, do you feel me on this one? I mean, like, this pay-per-view didn't do too well. Do you think that maybe that match could have helped it? I mean, it was a short card. I mean, do you think they could have threw – I mean, we had the Bushwhackers and the Nasty Boys. We had Piper versus Flair. We had a tag team title match with the Rockers and the Legion of Doom. What do you think? Do you think they were better as dark matches, or would you have liked to see them on the pay-per-view?
Well, let's put it this way. I was fine with the how short the pay-per-view was. Maybe you could have added one or two matches, so maybe you would have put Flair, but seeing that Flair was part or interfere of the main event, I would not have put him on the card at all. I mean, Flair, they found a way to use Flair on the pay-per-view, maybe not for his own match, but yet he was still there.
It makes it more
either
special.
Way.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. And I agree with that. And I actually will correct myself. Kerry Von Erich was here. He actually
he fought Hercules.
Yeah, he went against Hercules. The match actually aired on Primetime Wrestling.
Okay.
And it sucked. I watched it last night.
Double count out, right?
Yeah, double count out. And what's actually funny about that match is these two had been working each other on the house show loop for months.
Yeah.
And I agree with what Clinton is saying.
Yeah, he made a very good point, because short and sweet isn't always bad either. For an hour and a half, it was kind of a chef's kiss. You didn't feel like, oh, like at some of the pay-per-views we watch now, it's like, when is this thing going to fucking end?
Right.
You didn't feel like that here. So
yeah.
He is right on that.
I mean, they could have added, like, they could have gone closer to that 10 o'clock hour.
Yeah.
They
could have made it two.
Yeah.
They could have made it two, but to be honest with you, like, if they were going to take one out, if they were going to like either add one, or they could have taken out the tag match with DiBiase and Repo Man versus El Matador and Virgil.
And they could have added that.
Or they could have taken that out.
Taken it out? It wasn't in it, was it?
DiBiase and Repo Man versus Santana and Virgil?
That wasn't on the main card.
Yeah, it was.
Are you sure?
Yeah. It was right before DiBiase.
Yeah, it was
right before Hogan and Undertaker.
You are right.
You could have taken that out and put in a tag title match in. Now, I get why they did it, because this was a situation that was set up on television. Okay? And you also have to know, too, that you don't necessarily need all of your big stars on one card.
Yeah, but doesn't the attendance and buy rate kind of show that, though?
Well, like, that's what they believed back then.
Yeah.
Now, would they need – because it would be the same thing within your house.
But what I will say to their credit, even though they had 52 dark matches and they filmed primetime wrestling, they did all this shit, that crowd was hot the whole way through. I will give them that. We haven't even touched on the first match yet. But when we get to the matches, the crowd was hot. They were popping at everything. They were popping at Skinner and Brett.
Well, and that's the thing, is that back then the crowd gave a damn. And if you look at how many matches there supposedly were, right? By the time the pay-per-view started at 8 o'clock, I think 7 o'clock Central Time, which was Texas time.
Yeah.
And you look at that, and as many dark matches as they had to have, you know, beforehand.
Right.
This fucking thing probably started at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, it had to start early. That's what I'm saying. So the fact that the crowd was not, like, bored or anything by this time is pretty crazy. Yeah. It makes sense why they put big matches in the dark matches, too, though, if they were going to have that many, because the crowd never got disappointed.
Because you have to think about it. LOD's going to pop the crowd.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty are going to pop the crowd. The Bushwhackers are going to pop the crowd. Boss Man, Tornado.
Flair's a heel and it'll pop the crowd.
Flair and Piper, absolutely. You know, even Tito Santana worked twice on this fucking thing.
Yeah, that was the other tag match, and that's what I thought you were talking about. Because didn't they do it twice?
No, he worked Colonel Mustafa.
Colonel Mustafa.
And that match ended up on Primetime Wrestling, which very few of these guys had to work twice on this show. And he was one of them that had to work twice. You want to get, if you know you're going to be there all night, and Dan, I've been to one of these TV tapings before.
Yeah.
All right, back when I was like 6.
Right.
Mom and Dad took me for my birthday. 5 hours, these things usually go.
Damn.
Okay? And they have to, because what they will do is they will tape, I think it's 4 TVs, and then you have about 3 dark matches that are basically just meant for the crowd.
Yeah.
And about 4 or 5, maybe 6 matches that are going to go on either Primetime Wrestling or Coliseum Home Video.
Yeah.
Okay. That's how they do that.
That's incredible, though, that the crowd, because this was like the best era for the crowd. They were always popping at everything.
Yeah.
Now, Marks can't even sit in a building for 3 hours without fucking.
Oh, now without bitching, and they'll go on Twitter and they'll be like, you know, when is this fucking thing going to end?
Yeah. it's crazy the excitement for it back then. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you have any more on the dark?
I'll just say one more thing about the dark matches is that Chris Chavis and J.W. Storm. For anybody that doesn't know, Chris Chavis is Tatanka. Okay? That's his real name. And he had technically been with the company almost a year at this point.
Yeah.
But they haven't put him on TV yet because they didn't know what gimmick to give him. But they knew he was going to be a Native American. Oh, because that's what he is.
Makes sense.
But they did not know what they were going to call him, so they were actually just going to call him by his real name.
Who's J.W. Storm?
J.W. Storm is a he was in WCW for a while as part of the Maximum Overdrive tag team. I really don't remember him that much. I remember him from Halloween Havoc in 1990. He wrestled Brad Armstrong and lost, and the match never made home video. because at that time, all Turner wrestling tapes had to be 2 hours.
Did it make the pay-per-view up?
Yeah, it made the pay-per-view. It made the pay-per-view, but like when it got the home video.
Yeah, I know some matches got cut.
It happens all the fucking time. But yeah, I think that's the last I got on the dark matches. But it just amazes me, like, all the talent they had at that time. To me, it's kind of like if I had this talent roster,
yeah,
I would. And they said, okay, you can. You're going on for an hour and a half. Everybody's in the building. Five matches have to make pay-per-view. How in the fuck are you going to decide what five matches are going to go with all those guys that are on there?
Yeah. I agree. And to be fair, I think they picked a couple of duds, but I thought they picked a couple of great ones too. And let's get into the card now.
Okay.
We start off, by the way, we do have to touch on, who was the other commentator with Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon? I never caught his name at the beginning, but I heard him talking the whole time. Andy something?
No, Monsoon and Heenan were by themselves.
Oh, I thought they were talking to somebody else, too.
No, they were screaming at each other.
Okay. I thought I got somebody else, too. But we got to touch on how hilarious those two. I mean, they're one of the best duos of all time. I'm a big JR and King fan, of course. And, you know, Shivani and Heenan was good, too. But Heenan and Monsoon, for this era, they were gold.
If you go back and watch the 91 Survivor Series, there were so many good, like Monsoon, at one point, Bobby Heenan was trying to bring up the problems of the Rockers. And he said, it's in the World Wrestling Federation magazine. Don't you read that? I have my own column in there. And Monsoon goes, all you do is look at the pictures. I don't even think you can read. I'm dying. And then, and also at one point, he says to Brain, he goes, Brain, if you keep quiet, nobody will know how stupid you are. And I'm just, and I'm thinking, I'm like, and these guys are friends?
They were best friends, too.
Yeah. But no, they had such a chemistry, a babyface and a heel chemistry that just like, I mean, I don't think anybody, they were the original ones to do it, I think. And then JR and King kind of perfected it their way.
Yeah, when you think about all-time greats at the commentary booth, there was just something about those. And obviously, you nitpicked a lot of the facts that he was spitting. Gorilla Monsoon gave some suspect remarks on a few times, but he still sold it so great. And he was like, he was just so good at play-by-play. Yeah. Even if he wasn't always saying the correct information, it was awesome.
Yeah, but here's the thing is that, like, because, and this is where I'm going to stick up for Gorilla, because I love Gorilla Monsoon.
Me too.
Okay. He grew up in that old school to where you have to make the people believe everything coming out of your mouth.
Yeah.
Even if you're kayfabe.
Yeah.
So he's part of that old school mentality. And everybody trusts a Gorilla Monsoon because he's everybody's grandfather, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. I mean, there's gorilla position to this day.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
The guy's been gone over 20 years, and they still have a position named after him.
And that's where the owner of the company sits for basically every match.
Yeah. And then, because to be honest with you, like, when they technically took him off TV, they basically just, or when McMahon decided, hey, I'm going to start doing the pay-per-views from now on. Because he actually didn't like sitting back there. Because he would start to nitpick everybody. So he said to Gorilla, he goes, you just want to sit back here? He's like, yeah, sure. So that's why they named it the Gorilla position.
Yeah.
So.
But let's get into it. Bret Hart and Skinner.
This match should not have been really that. This should have just been Bret just beating the hell out of a guy.
Yeah.
And retaining the Intercontinental title, and that's it, right?
Yeah.
This match actually was decent. And I know you don't like Skinner.
No, he sucks. Sorry. He was like, he's just one of those old school, he's very like, I think of him as like the Barbarian almost.
Yeah.
Or the Berserker, not the Barbarian. The Barbarian was good. The Berserker. I put those two in kind of the same, like, and maybe Warlord, too. It's just, like, they're not significant to me. I know they, like, I just don't think they really drew anything.
And this era, too, was also very gimmick-heavy.
Yeah. And some of them really worked. I just don't think, I mean, Skinner, like, the whole, like, Southern, basically, like, fuck it, like a swamp type of guy.
Florida Everglades, yeah.
Yeah. He's an all right opponent for Brett, but his wrestling ability was not near to the level on the show. And Brett can carry. Brett tried to carry for about 14 minutes here, or
yeah,
whatever. He just didn't really, like, you've seen Bret Hart at his best, and at this time, he was really good. Like, he wasn't yet at the prime, but he was getting right there, and he's been very good for a long time. I just don't think Skinner was, like, that awesome of an opponent. Like, there was, like you said, we have such a loaded roster, and we get fucking Skinner versus Bret Hart.
Okay, so I'm going to throw out two more options out there, and the other two can actually chime in if they want.
Yeah, I was
going
to toss it to Eric.
If Clintus already hasn't fallen asleep. All right. So, Bret Hart was involved in a feud with Imani at the time.
Yes.
And plus, also, I said, you know, IRS wasn't even here.
Uh-huh.
I don't even know if he had made the trip. Would you have put either Imani or IRS in this spot against Bret?
I mean, yeah. Yeah, or like just one of the guys back there that could put on a really – because did him and Skinner have any heat, really?
You no.
Said they had 6 days to build it up. Did they do anything to build it up? Or?
They didn't do anything. I actually watched –
So this is a cold match.
It's a cold match because I actually did watch the episode of Wrestling Challenge the other night. Well, it wasn't on the other night. I turned it on. That came before this show.
Yeah.
And nothing was really built. So
it's like, if you're going to do that, like...
They should have put Mountie in there. Either that or they could have had IRS in there, because IRS can carry a load, too.
Give him Piper.
Piper. Or, to be honest with you, he was back there in Barbarian. Barbarian was back there. Barbarian had to work a primetime wrestling match with Berserker, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, I want to apologize to Barbarian. I met the Berserker because Barbarian was really good. I don't want to shit on him.
And yeah, Barbarian also a nice guy too.
Yeah.
But no, like, put Barbarian out there with Bret. I mean, because Barbarian can really unload on him too, and you know, Bret'll sell.
Eric, what do you think of this match?
I thought it was a solid match. It was better than I thought. I didn't even know who. What was his name again?
Skinner.
Mm-hmm. Skinner. I thought he was okay. I mean, Bret Hart, as we know, is a Hall of Famer. And I thought Skinner was better than I thought. I never heard of him. I thought they overhyped him a bit, but I think it was just basic.
See, the funny thing about Skinner, Steve Kern is his real name, by the way. Steve Kern... Back in the 80s in Memphis was part of a tag team called the Fabulous Ones with Stan Lane.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a good tag team.
They were very over. But by the time Skinner got here, he was so past his prime, Vince is like, all right, well, we'll put a gimmick on him, pal. And he said, all right, you're going to be, you know, you're from Florida. You're a Florida guy. Everglades.
Basically what they did with Wyndham and the Stalker, almost.
Yeah, pretty much, except for, like, Wyndham...
past his prime old guy.
Yeah.
Great hand in the past.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, yeah, you pretty much have that right. But, yeah, it's just like, okay, you know, Florida guy, you were a Florida heartthrob. We're going to push in the Everglades to make you an alligator hunter.
I mean, but to the point, though, he looked it. I will give him that. Skinner looked the fucking gimmick, especially with the shit. It looked like he's been wearing it his whole life. I did not think that
the chew in the beard, like, that was kind of disgusting.
Yeah, but he looked like what they were. He did the gimmick well.
Yeah.
I just didn't really care for it. But for what he had, I think he tried and he looked the part well enough. But I just think you could have put better in there with Bret. Clint, what was your thoughts on this one?
Well, I'll tell you too. Oh, well, like Eric said, I had no idea who Skinner was, but I think Bret, like, put over Skinner much was. I really thought Bret Hart, that should have been a squash match.
Yeah,
and Bret did his best to make Skinner actually look as good as he really did.
I agree.
I thought in my mind the match should have been a squash when Brett just beating the mess out of him and retained his Intercontinental title. So start to finish.
Yeah, and but the thing is too is that Brett also likes to give people their money's worth.
Well, he's known for making people good.
Yeah.
Like, he's underrated for how good, like, you know how good of a technician he is, but he also is a hell of a seller.
Yeah.
He has that flair instinct, too, to when, like, he's made, like, Shawn Michaels was really good in his own right, but Brett made him look amazing. And that's why Brett got pissed because Shawn wouldn't do it for him. But Brett, like, Stone Cold, he made him a star.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I do get where you guys are coming from with Skinner. I think Skinner was actually a decent worker.
He was back in the day. I will say, now that...
But you're saying here past his prime?
Past his prime. I will apologize again because I didn't put the two and two together. Thought they were different people for some reason. I forgot about his... I know the tag team you're talking about.
Right, yeah.
And... from the old shit that we've watched, and very good entertaining tag team. By the time he got here, the steam was out of the engine.
And that's the problem, I think, a lot of times, is that, like, when guys finally make it to the big time, and we've even said this about some of the guys when we talk about WCW 96 or 98, and Berserker John Nord is actually kind of an example of this.
Yeah.
Because even, like, in 92-ish, Berserker was technically getting a push.
Yeah.
I mean, he stabbed The Undertaker with a sword, but, you know, tomato, tomato. But by the time he got to WCW in 98, he was so washed up. It wasn't funny. And Skinner's just like, again, Skinner wasn't that heartthrob anymore. Or Steve Kern. But also Steve Kern, very loyal guy because, you know, for years, probably up until about 2007, 2008, he was a road agent for WWE. He was one of their producers.
Yeah. And that's good. And he was good in that role, maybe. And I enjoyed his work back in the day. It's just, maybe it was the gimmick.
It's not for everybody.
But... just the ring work in this one, I just thought it was very Brett heavy. And I do think Skinner looked good, but as a fan and a student in the game, and we could even Clint have touched on it, it was Brett that was making him look good.
Well, yeah, no, I agree.
With all that being said, I'm giving the match 6 stars.
I'll give it 7. I thought it was a really good opener.
I'll give it 6.5. I'll
give it a 6.
Okay. Now, before we get into Savage and Jake, the story here is crazy because this is after the whole snake bite thing.
Yes.
Angle's hot. Now, Jake's promo, I just remember looking at you and I was like, holy shit, how good was he? Just the sinisterness. Like, well, first of all, Savage, Randy Savage is in my top 5 greatest of all time. I love Randy Savage. His promo was like he did an 8-ball beforehand, but it was awesome too, and it was like a paranoid, like he was like he had the snake venom in him. Like, that was good too. It was like both of them were in on this storyline, and this storyline made the card for me. And even some people might have thought the segment at the end was a little too long. I thought it was Savage's promo. It was brilliant because he was, like, paranoid, but he's like, I'm going to beat this guy's ass, and I'm going to do it for us and, you know, fuck him and the snake. And Jake's getting all sinister and scary and, you know, saying that he's going to maybe have it happen again and talking about Elizabeth.
Yeah, even though Jack Tunney had said all reptiles are barred from ringside.
Yeah.
Now, to backstory this a little bit here, obviously, you know, you touched on the snake bite.
Yes.
Now, originally, Jake Roberts at the Survivor Series was supposed to captain a team, which was the Natural Disasters and IRS and him versus Sid Justice, LOD, and the Big Boss Man, which was actually supposed to be the main event of the show.
Yeah.
Okay? Because Sid Justice was the one fighting the battle for Randy Savage. Because, of course, you know, and we touched on it because we did SummerSlam 91 when Jake and Undertaker interrupted the wedding, or the wedding reception. Sid Justice tore his bicep at the end of October, 91, because he landed wrong. He was working against Jake, and he did a move that I don't think, you know, is he's accustomed to. He landed wrong, and he tore his bicep, or however it went. So they ran a storyline of trying to get Randy reinstated. And Jack Tunney kept saying, I'm taking it under advisement, I'm taking it under advisement. And Gorilla Monsoon, I watched the episodes of Wrestling Challenge leading up to this, and Gorilla Monsoon basically, he did everything but call Jack Tunney a fucking idiot. Because he's just like, take it under advisement, we're a week away from Survivor Series. Don't you think they need to know who their partner is? Jack Tunney, get it together. You know, that's actually what he said. So anyway, but they ran the angle because they wanted to push. They wanted to get Randy and Jake in the ring in a singles match on pay-per-view. They didn't want to do it at Survivor Series.
Yeah.
So they ran the angle, and the snake bite was, by the way, scared the fucking shit out of me when I was a kid. I don't know. You guys have seen that segment, right?
Yeah.
Clintus, have you seen the snake bite segment?
I never saw it. No, I did not. I just went in this pay-per-view blind to that.
You didn't see when...
What led up to it? No.
The whole... when he was like... That's like an iconic moment, though.
That's like... Attitude Era before Attitude Era.
Yeah, that's still in, like, my top 10 craziest moments. It's just Elizabeth Bryan and Savage just writhing in pain. And you can see the snake biting him. Like, this isn't a get... That snake bit him. It wasn't poisonous and shit. It was the fang.
No.
But it bit him. And you see that as a viewer, and you're like, holy shit, it's biting him, and he's fucking screaming and crying, and his wife's crying. This is fucking crazy.
Yeah, and here's the thing. It's Jake the Snake Roberts, actually, because Randy pissed him off beforehand.
Yeah.
Before they went out there. So Jake is slapping the snake in the face.
trying to
get it pissed off.
Yeah.
Which already the goddamn thing's already pissed off because it has to hang out in the bag.
Yeah.
Which they don't like. So he's already mad. And then, you know, he comes out, and now you got this asshole, this fucking cokehead slapping him. So, of course, you know, he's going to bite whoever the fuck. But anyway, to get back to the backstory a little bit, instead of doing the 4-on-4 elimination match at Survivor Series, they decided, okay, we're going to put this on pay-per-view. Like, in a single. Because this is what it needs to be.
Yeah.
And just the whole setup was crazy. I mean, when Jake got bit, or when Macho got bit by that snake, little kids were crying in that audience, okay? They actually panned out to a little kid. He had a Hogan shirt on. Hogan shirt on. Little kind of haircut. He looked like a miniature. He actually looked like that Hasbulla, the MMA.
I fucking love that little dude.
And just like he was crying, and you felt bad for the kid. But it's just like, Jesus Christ! Again, it scared the shit out of me when I was a kid, and so did what happened, you know, at the end of this thing, at the end of this match.
Yeah. Do you want to get into it?
Okay. So Macho Man wins. The match only goes 6 minutes and 25 seconds. 6 minutes and 25 seconds, and you give Bulldog and Warlord almost 13 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, again, like the segment went longer.
Yeah, like it was a long – I mean, the match itself was quick, but the segment was long.
So
yeah, the match was quick, but the whole thing was like – it felt long.
Yeah, it was a while.
It was long and drawn out, but I really – well, first of all, I don't think he needed three DDTs.
But to that, it feels like nitpicking too, because like even like when he was yelling at her for a while, it's like, all right, we could speed this up, but it's like it's still made for such a crazy moment that I'm cool with the length of one.
And what about Hebner? Hebner didn't do a fucking thing except for he's
It's like it's not a match anymore. You are a grown man, Earl. If you want to try to like step in, you can't. You don't have to just yell.
If you want to save her, step in.
Yeah.
It's like, as a comparison, it's like when we yell at you to do the dishwasher. All right, it's like goddammit, do the dishwasher. You're not going to listen. You don't have to listen. Just like Jake really didn't have to listen here. Jake wasn't going to. Nobody was fining him with a suspension or a fine. Nobody was threatening him with that. So it's just like, just because you yell at somebody to do something doesn't mean they're going to fucking do it.
Yeah.
You go up, you grab him by the earlobe, and you throw him out of the fucking ring.
Yeah.
They didn't. And I'm not saying we would do that to you. He's a dishwasher. But,
we'd have to do it to you so you get the trash out.
And do the kitty litter. But no, the whole thing, the DDTs, and then when he grabbed Elizabeth, which, by the way, true story here, when they did that, watching this when I was little, watching it with Dad,
yeah.
I got sent in the other room. He goes, get out of here. I go, well, what's going on? He goes, just go. I don't want you to see what's going to happen here. And I ran out, and... You know, what happened. I got called back in. I said, well, what happened? And he goes, Elizabeth got slapped. Because it was almost made to look like he was going to DDT her.
Yeah. And that's why I'm so glad they went, because this is so cutting edge. And this is why this is one of my favorite storylines, is because everything from the snake bite to this, it's so like almost Jerry Springer-ish before Jerry. Like, it's like what ECW was trying to be, but it's so early. And just the sinisterness, and it's like a good guy versus just this evil scumbag, you know. He hit a woman. And the fact that he cranked back and he hit a woman. And that meant so much more, and it made him so much more vicious than if he would have just hit a DDT on her. Because it's like, it's a gimmick. It's a move. We all know it's a move. But he fucking hit her in the face.
Did anybody else think, though, like at that – well, for anybody that was just watching this, you know, Cole, first time, did anybody else think that, like, Mean Gene Okerlund was going to haul off and hit him backstage while interviewing him? Because Gene was kind of giving off that vibe, like, you know, if I didn't have a job to do, I'd fucking haul off and belt you myself. Because, like, when he said, I feel that should be something I would have to pay for, or however he worded that.
Yeah.
I would pay for that. I mean, Gene's just like, oh, get the fuck out of here. Like,
yeah, it was funny.
Like, it's just like he had everybody so riled up. And Jake the Snake Roberts was the number one heel, I think, on the show.
To me, he's one of the greatest heels of all time, him and Roddy. But he just so, like, his babyface run was okay. But just him being a bad guy, and, like, this was the perfect thing to go after the babyface run, to, like, cement, this guy's a scumbag. And that's what they did here. And... It worked for me. I'm giving it 9 stars.
I got to give it 9 myself.
I'll give it 9.5. It was a good story.
Are you rating it for the story or just for a match aspect? Because a match aspect, I thought, kind of...
Yeah, I went the whole segment. Just because it's such an impactful segment, for this one, I went the whole segment. That's why I'm giving it 9.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to say, it wasn't too many matches. That what they did... I would not give it a – well, if you're giving the whole segment, yes, I'll agree with that. Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you, too. If we're just going match, I'd probably have to drop it to, like, a 7 because it was short, and it was all right, but it's what happened after, which is what mattered.
It's called – yeah, it's the perfect storytelling.
Yeah.
And imagine this. Had Sid Justice not gotten hurt, we wouldn't probably have it. It would have been Sid out here.
Yeah. Thank God. All right, boys. We got the Bulldog and the Warlord, your favorite program of all time.
Oh, my God. I'm not going to be – and here's the thing. I like Davey. I was a huge fan of Davey when I was little, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, Warlord, he's a very nice man.
You met him.
Okay, I've met him. He's a nice man. He couldn't believe that I remembered half the shit that I remembered.
I don't think anybody can.
I was talking to him and Barbarian about their Survivor Series 1988 match. Barbarian looks at me and says, how the hell do you remember that? We were there, and I don't even remember. He went to Warlord. He goes, who did we work? And Bulldog just started, or Warlord started naming off teams. He goes, yeah, we worked the Mask guys, too. I said, the Conquistadors? He goes, yeah, the Mask guys. Because Warlord's looking at me like, don't fucking show me up. I'll get up and I'll fucking slash a whole Nelson on your ass. But Warlord is a very nice man. Or he seemed to be when I met him. But he couldn't go.
No.
And Davey, I mean, and I get why they were doing what they're... And also, Warlord, too. Warlord could be a diva.
Yeah.
Like, if there were guys he did not want to work with and put over, the man just looked like shit.
Yeah. The only thing I'll give it, if you don't pay attention to the storyline and you didn't think, well, they faced each other on, like, every pay-per-view this year and Davey won all of them. If you don't think about that and you go into this as a solo, like, endeavor, it's kind of cool because you got the big, like, towering bad guy and you got the, you know, British, like, white meat baby face, like, the good guy. Like, you just love Davey. When he comes on screen, you love the Bulldog.
It was Davey versus Goliath,
yeah,
technically.
Yeah. And so when you go into it with that aspect, it's not half bad. But if you think about the whole storyline, it was kind of lame.
Well, which are two compadres here. All right, they were not fans around this because you guys technically weren't watching wrestling around this time, right?
No, I started watching it right after SummerSlam of 97.
Okay. And Eric, you told me before you started in 95, right?
About 95, 96-ish.
Okay. So you guys had no clue any of this stuff was going on.
Right.
No.
Thank God for the network.
So like, you guys, you know, are watching this kind of for, like, the first time. You don't know the backstory. You don't know everything that, you know, went on.
Sort of it.
Yes.
You want to ask that louder so they can...
No, you asked. You said what you were getting there.
Well, so, Quintus, let me ask you first. What did you think of Bulldog and Warlord, like this match here?
Well, I thought it was a good match. I mean, I know the Bulldog because, like, Bulldog, Hartford Nation, you put two and two together. Just like the opening match with Bret Hart and Skinner, you have no idea who Skinner was. And you're looking at, okay, this is the guy that, and since I knew who Bret Hart is, Bret just smashed in this guy's daylights. And I'm already, like, halfway out of it watching it, by the way. I am, like, halfway out of it at the time. So it's like, I enjoyed it. Well, for parts I remember, I did enjoy parts of it. But, and I will say that it is what it is. I enjoyed the match. Had no idea what was going on. Just like the whole Jake Roberts and Macho Man. You see, I had no idea what the snake bite, what was that all about, because I didn't see it. It's not like they gave, like they do now. They
yeah,
show
no
build up of what happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
There's no
video
build up
to
why it's going on.
No.
So you're kind of lost in the loop. So you're trying to put your own story together why these guys are beating the hell out of each other and what's going on.
Yeah, and yep. Here's the thing, too, is that, like, the announcers never really brought it up. Like, if you really think about it, announcers back then were kind of trained to have short-term memory.
Well, yeah, I mean, Roberts talked about the snake bite in the promo. And,
yeah,
and said
yeah but they didn't show it.
Too. No, they didn't show it. But they talked about it a little bit. But he's right. There was not like there's video packages before each match to tell you the story. So if you weren't watching around this time, you're kind of fucked. But For a standalone match, I thought it was pretty good. Eric, what'd you think?
I thought it was decent. I thought both guys did what they had to do. And Bulldog had to win and put him over.
I know he was Bulldog's one of the guys that had allegations, right? Steroids? I don't know. But he looked great around this. I don't know if he was doing it or if it's natural or not, but that man was fucking jacked.
Okay, so around this, they were heavily pushing him. And I was actually watching this last week. They did a special in London, England at the Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah.
A big pay-per-view on Sky Sports. And they had this big battle royal for this the Royal Santa Barbara Trophy, which was made of pure silver.
Right.
And Davey, obviously being the London guy, he won the battle royal. So he got like that big push. And they were really pushing him. Again, like I said earlier, he was the guy working Undertaker in the house show loop the week that Undertaker was the champion.
Yeah.
So obviously they had big plans for this guy.
Yeah. And he looked good.
Yeah. So, yeah, he was over. The problem is that I think, too, his drug habit was starting to hit him.
Yeah.
But, no, this match, I mean, and I would give this match a 7. I'm not going to say, you know, the match wasn't good because it was. I mean, it shouldn't have gone 12 minutes because Warlord should not go that long. But Davey did what he could to carry the guy.
Yeah. I thought it was a 7, too. I like this a little more than the first one, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll still go with my basic 6.5 with that one.
Easy.
Yeah, I'll give it a 6.5, yeah.
Okay.
All right, Repo and DiBiase with the always sensational Sherry. We will do an episode on her someday. Against El Matador, better known as Tito Santana, and Virgil.
Okay, so this match, again, this was another match that actually had some build.
Didn't we watch the build almost? Because we saw the DiBiase and Virgil match, right?
Well, yeah, the SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Right?
That was after this, right?
Yeah. So DiBiase had gotten the $1 million belt back at an event called Survivor Series Showdown. Now, for anybody that doesn't know, Survivor Series Showdown back in the day used to be like when they always had the team concepts. It would always be representatives from each team going at it in a one-on-one match.
Yeah.
Right? And DiBiase was representing Ric Flair's team. Virgil was representing Roddy Piper's team. And they were going to have a match. $1 million belt was going to be on the line. Repo Man had been hired by DiBiase to repossess the $1 million title. So he went to ringside, he grabbed it, he put it in his jacket. Virgil went to grab him, so he cracked Virgil in the face with it. DiBiase pinned him, got the win. So then afterwards, DiBiase and Repo were doing a stomp job on him, and El Matador ran out. He had nothing really to do with the storyline whatsoever. But he ran out. He helped Virgil. Here we go. This tag match is made.
Yeah.
Even though Repo Man was not on DiBiase's team at Survivor Series and El Matador was not on Virgil's team. But, you know, they kind of mixed that together because they were going to start working the house show loop. They were going to do this tag match. And on other nights, or like some nights they were going to do this tag match and other nights, Virgil was going to work with the Repo Man, and DiBiase was going to work with Matador. As a matter of fact, DiBiase and Matador were actually going to start working in a feud. Didn't really last long, though. I think they did, by February, Repo Man and Virgil were still working with each other. Lord help us. And, but like DiBiase had moved on to the Money Inc. team.
Yeah.
So they had this match. And to be honest with you, like people were still hot for the match because, again, the crowd was hot all night. But so much steam had been taken out of you and I by the time this thing aired.
Yeah.
That, like, I was just like, yeah, it's a good match, but who cares?
Right.
But, the build there, so again, this is a match that had, you know, some build to it. Which, but again, like, I almost called Clinton Virgil. But like Clinton and Eric wouldn't know that because, again, they're going into this thing cold.
Yeah.
I mean, Eric would know about the build because Eric did the SummerSlam show with us.
Yeah.
So, but like, because, again, they didn't really bring it up. I mean, Heenan kind of mentioned it.
What did you think of the match, Eric?
I thought it was probably the worst match on the card. I didn't think it was all that. I was kind of bored from it.
What did you think, Clinton?
I think that was, well, out of all the matches, that was the one that put me to sleep.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, like, three of the four guys in this match could go. Virgil wasn't a great worker.
Yeah, but he was good, like, in the SummerSlam match. Like, when DiBiase could carry him.
Yeah.
Repo Man was pretty good. Around this time, I mean, no, he was good. But I don't know if it's the four guys' fault. I just think it really, like, I think the heat was kind of gone with Virgil and DiBiase, to be honest, by this.
Yeah, it was just another, like, the feud had ran its course, I think.
It was great, but it was pretty much over.
Yeah. If it runs its course, it's not really going to do anything.
Yeah. It's like when we see Randy and Cena again. You know, it's like, over.
Or like Triple H and Undertaker for the umpteenth time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I would, to be honest with you, I would give the match a 5.
I'd give it a 4.
I'll give it a 3.
Eric, you going 2?
I'm giving it 2.
I knew that was coming. All right. Main event, boys. Hulk Hogan and The Undertaker. Hulk's getting his belt back.
Well,
he's trying to.
Yeah.
He's going against Taker. Taker won the belt at Survivor Series. What did we think of this one? I'm going to start with you, Clint.
I liked it, to tell you the truth. I was more surprised that Hogan won the belt back so soon the way it was building up to be. I was thinking that maybe Taker was going to win this, Taker and retain this title and prove that really the death of Hulkamania was what it was supposed to be, the death of Hulkamania.
Yeah.
Even though as a kid not knowing what wrestling was, everybody loved Hulk Hogan. I was rooting for Taker to win that match, and I was really disappointed that he lost the way he did.
Eric?
I thought the match was okay. I mean, it was better than I thought. Probably one of the better Hogan matches I've seen.
Yeah, I thought it was better than the Survivor Series match. And I didn't mind it. What did you think, Doug?
I thought it was a good match. And here's the thing. For Hogan gets his belt back, obviously, right? Now, like, at the end, it's kind of teased that, Jack Tunney might reverse the decision. Of course, Gorilla Monsoon says there's nothing Jack Tunney can do about it. Like, he's the fucking president of the company. Do whatever the hell he wants. And the weekend after this, it was on Superstars of Wrestling, Jack Tunney said that he was declaring the title vacant, and that's how the title became up for grabs at the Royal Rumble.
Woo!
Yeah. like, and you had Flair's involvement and all that stuff. But, like, it was such a good setup because, again, it's a good story.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, Tuesday in Texas, you know, it's shown as a pay-per-view on Peacock, right?
Yeah.
But you can actually also watch it because it was originally – the pay-per-view wasn't released on home video, on Coliseum home video. It was released as part of Super Tape 92, which, by the way, is also on the network or on Peacock. And, like, the extra matches you get on there are you get the Undertaker snooker match from WrestleMania 7 because they do a personality profile on the Undertaker. You get Undertaker versus Greg Valentine. Bret Hart versus IRS for the Intercontinental title. And then 8-man with the Earthquake, the Nasty Boys and the Mountie versus the Boss Man, the LOD, and the Anvil.
Really?
Yeah, and I think there might be another match on there, but I don't remember. I don't think so. I might actually watch it later. But, yeah, like those, but yeah, so like if anybody, that's actually what I asked you. I said, do you want to, you know, watch that? And when you asked me how long is it, I said, well, it's longer. It's pay-per-view. This pay-per-view should only be like an hour and 45 minutes, with the super tape would be like 2.5 hours. And you're like, okay, no. but no, like getting back to Hogan and Undertaker, it was basically just the whole idea was just set up, you know, what could possibly happen at the Royal Rumble. And Royal Rumble, because we are heading up on the 30th anniversary of that Royal Rumble next month, you know, in January, which, by the way, for anybody keeping score, today is the 30th anniversary of the Tuesday in Texas pay-per-view. It happened 30 years ago.
Today was his 30th anniversary.
Yeah. But, like, the Royal Rumble, like, everybody, I think, heading into that Royal Rumble, and again, next month I do want to do it, thought that it was either going to be Hogan winning or Undertaker winning or Flair winning. But then, like, you have 30 guys that all have the, you know, that all have the opportunity. I mean, but nobody thought Hercules or Colonel Mustafa were going to win.
Yeah.
But with the whole Hogan, Undertaker, Flair storyline, it was good television because it's just like, okay, Hogan's finally met his match. Because, like, now you're not sure if the guy's going to come out on top or not. Because it looks like, you know, you finally have guys that can, you know, that can beat him.
Yeah.
Undertaker was one of those guys.
Yes, he was. What would you give this out of a 10?
The match I would give a 7.
I think I'd give it a 7.5.
There you go.
Clinton?
I'll give it a 7.
Eric?
I'll give it 7.
All right. Now, what would our final thoughts be on this? Because we've given a lot of good content, and we went in depth on the pay-per-view, the dark matches, everything. But for the pay-per-view Tuesday in Texas, as it stands, what are our final thoughts and rating? I'll start with you, Eric.
I thought it was a solid show, better than I thought. I didn't realize it was Hogan versus Undertaker until I watched and did a little more research on it. And so I thought it was a pretty solid show for what it was on a Tuesday night.
Clinton?
I thought it was a solid show for a Tuesday pay-per-view. I look at it like this. Even though it is a Tuesday pay-per-view, you got to realize it's a school night. So for it to be an hour and a half long and put on a good show that kept me for that one match interested, I'll have to give it a solid 8. That's what I would give it. I 8 rating.
Hey,
I give it 8.5.
Okay. Doug. Okay. So again, you know, like Clint has said, this is a school night. So this is a night where, like, a lot of kids, like, they have to go to school the next day.
Yeah.
It wasn't one of those things to where, like, you know, usually WrestleMania, you know, would be school the next day.
Yeah, I mean, aren't they – it's always Sunday anyway.
Yeah, well, but WrestleMania would always have a 4 p.m. bell time, 4 p.m. start time.
Yeah.
So, like, you could have, like, the rest of the night to, you know, kind of recuperate or whatever. This is 8 o'clock at night. You know you got to go to school the next day, but you'll have something to talk to the other kids about. I mean, if you like talking to the other kids. But, well, I kind
of course you like talking to other kids. Well, I did.
But anyway.
but this
pay-per-view, again, you had so many guys on the roster. I would find it hard to decide, okay, who the fuck is going to do this thing? So, but for who we got and what we got and some of the, you know, moments we got from here, I would give it a 9.
Damn. See, I would go 8.5. And I go 8.5. I thought this was a great show. I thought for a Tuesday show, it was different. It was cool. Hogan and Undertaker was a great main event. I thought Randy Savage and Jake Roberts made the show. And all the other stuff, there was some filler, but it was good filler too. So 8.5. Yeah. I thought this was a very well put together show. Now, we will see everybody next week for the Mick Foley top 10 matches and moments / retrospective.
Yeah, that poll should be going up sometime this weekend. I got to start working on what moments are going to go on the poll.
Okay.
I do have my pay-per-view I selected for 2 weeks, right?
For December the 17th? Okay.
Armageddon 2000.
Armageddon 2000?
Yeah, the 21st anniversary is actually next Friday.
Armageddon Hell in a Cell match?
Yeah, the Angle, yep. Rikishi, Triple H, Rock, Undertaker, Austin.
Yep, sounds good. And we'll see everybody then?
Well
next
week.
Week.
Yeah.
And we'll see them then, too. Have a good one, guys.
All right.
Later.
Later.